Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. Those of you who, I doubt that anybody that's listening to the show has engaged me in some of their petty issues on social media. I find the hypocrisy interesting when I get with a person who complains about judicial interpretation or political interpretation of the Constitution, and then they themselves start interpreting for the rest of us how they see the Constitution. This is why I stick to the facts. This is why I stick to exactly their words, the framers' words, and cite them. This is what it says. And so in context, there was an individual who was making this assertion that, you know, it's like how all of a sudden this term enemy became an official class definition that a constitutional enemy is somebody that the United States has declared war against, and therefore, and I go, are you kidding me? That that is so outside the framework and context and the way they described the Constitution and enemies of the Constitution during the ratification debates and throughout our history. So why is it that these dolts that are supposedly claiming to be these champions of the Constitution are taking such a progressive position? Well, I'm telling you, they're not the people that they tell you they are. They don't even know the kind of person that they are. I think that they, you know, get manipulated into believing something, and then they become an activist, and before you know it, they really believe that they're a conservative person. Folks, there are people in our ranks that really believe that they're conservative in embracing absolute contrary positions to what the framers asserted the Constitution to be and what each line in the Constitution meant. So when we go down to a very specific line like invasion and our enemy, it does not mean in the context of the Constitution that an enemy is somebody that is actually taking up arms and firing and trying to kill us. They knew and they spoke of political enemies, social enemies, cultural enemies. They knew and actually banned Mohammedans from being able to migrate here or from being able to just take up any kind of residency and become an inhabitant. You could not be an enemy in our midst. As a matter of fact, they even, as we went through the ratification debates, they even spoke to slavery and those states that espoused and clung to slavery as states that were actually hosting enemies amongst us. Not because blacks or slaves are enemies, but the fact is when you've compelled somebody that, you know, at the threat of injury or loss of life, if they try to fight this forced work, this forced labor, and this compulsion upon them for their liberty, if they fight for their liberty, then you can't tell me that that is a mutually agreed labor transaction. You have a hostile force that is being used to obtain that labor. The hypocrisy is just, it's overwhelming. And so I don't want to rant like I did yesterday and really not cover the Whiskey Rebellion. But I can't go without commenting on a few comments, primarily a nudging from KB that, okay, so we have this huge abyss between the conservatives and progressives who look at January 6th as an insurrection, as something that is tantamount to an American, as Pence calls this. You know, this nation was based on liberty, and we are not bound to the whims of government rule, which is why we fought a Revolutionary War. We took our position prior to the Revolutionary War as Englishmen very seriously. We demanded our representation. We demanded our rights as Englishmen. And constantly, after several numerous attempts in trying to obtain the rights of Englishmen and being given, you know, the hand and being told, you don't apply. You are not an Englishman. Well, okay. Then clearly we're of another state and of another nation, which the logical conclusion was the Revolutionary War. And so the outcome of that Revolutionary War set the tone of how we would manage and control government. And right out the gate, they created a bad government. Everybody recognized, and as a matter of fact, there are probably more documentation, there are more documents and more complaints regarding the Articles of Confederation and how inept they were and how dangerous they were and how bad the states were behaving, because at that point in time, the states were the enemy. The states were the ones that were not cooperating with this newly formed Continental Congress. The states were the enemy. And therefore, when it came down time, and I think it was like the third attempt, the Constitutional Convention was the third or maybe even the fourth attempt of really trying to reel in the states. And it was very clear that the states were the problem. The states even admitted that they were the problem, because there was one amongst them that was glowing red so brightly, like Rudolph's nose in the snowstorm, that they were able to find their way to say, the states are the problem. Because the state of Rogue Island was actually the one that was frustrating and was actually the one that was willing to watch the Union and this republic be seized by foreign countries and foreign interests. Because clearly, when the Union falls, all of the wolves that were around us, because we had the French, Spanish, and the English surrounding us in America, in the North American continent, ready to seize us. Shoot, France was hurting for money. And as a matter of fact, they wanted us to pay them. Britain was demanding that they get paid. And some of that stuff we weren't going to pay. Some of it we were. And Spain, you know them, they were just greedy. They just wanted to control. I mean, look what they did and how they devastated Mexico and everything south. Spain and Portugal were bad players in conquering nations. And so the rest of us in the Northern Hemisphere, and or the Western Hemisphere, I should say, those of us in the Western Hemisphere are really paying for the consequences today of their bad behavior. Look at how they created such an illiterate group of nations. That's the best way you can tell I'm getting frustrated. We have such an illiterate group of nations that do not understand government, their civic responsibilities, and so forth. And that's what they wanted. They wanted to have that level of control. They wanted subjects, not citizens. And so what are they doing? They're importing those subjects here to become subjects here, not citizens. This is why they're not immigrating. This is an invasion. And that goes back to that ridiculous argument that I was getting from these idiots out on the Institute of the Constitution's Facebook page. I forget what it was called. Studies on the Constitution, something like that. Anyway, the fact of the matter is that the Convention of 1787 actually pulled the trump card of, you know, pulled the whammy, dropped down and opened up that can of whoop butt on the states. And they reeled the states in because they were recognized as the real problem. Let's not beat around the bush. The states were the ones that were keeping this general government called Continental Congress from being able to pay our debts and do the things that it needed to do. We gave them power, but we did not give them the power to do what they needed to do. Here, we delegated them to create debt, but they couldn't collect or tax us directly. They had to beg. So how is that a good government? How is it that the states aren't the bad players? So as we state in the Declaration of Independence, that we have an inalienable right to to basically overpower and or put aside our government and create a new one. And this is exactly what Madison and his compadres did at the Continental Convention. You got to remember that there were a lot of people at the very beginning of this convention that said, hey, this seems to be exceeding our bounds. But as they spoke about it, and there were a few, Rhode Island, that left because Rhode Island knew that they, you know, they would be considered heathens and non-brethren of their, actually of their heathenic tribe or their pagan tribe, whatever you want to call what was going on in Rhode Island at the time. So they left, but everybody else basically stayed. I mean, there were some that came and gone. I mean, Hamilton left because Hamilton was doing manipulative things and undermining the Constitutional Convention. As a matter of fact, when he left in July, he clearly went into a tirade. He says, I don't agree with this government, but, you know, this is how I feel it should be, and you guys are going to do whatever you want, so I'm going to do whatever I want. He left. And you can tell right after the Constitutional Convention and they formed the new government that Hamilton was true to his word. He started doing whatever he wanted to drift the government in the direction he felt was best, instead of abiding by the Constitution as ratified and following the amendment process. If a power was required, you amend it. Anyway, we'll be right back, and I'll wrap up, and then we'll get into the Whiskey Rebellion. I promise. Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so let me just, I wish I could be as clear and concise as Madison. I'm not obviously at his level of brilliance to be able to boil those things down. But actually, if you kind of look, when he goes into his arguments, he can be very verbose, and he can, he puts me to shame, just like Henry. Anyway, the fact of the matter is the Constitutional Convention of 1787 was clearly a move of acting in basically putting aside or reorganizing our government due to the necessity and the exigencies of the time, period. So in so doing, they created this constitutional framework and a legal system. And within the legal system and within our common law legal system, we have this concept of innocent until proven guilty. In other words, no man should go to jail until beyond a shadow of a doubt that they have committed the crime. I mean, we find it unconscionable that a person would serve time in jail if there is reasonable doubt that he killed somebody or she. Well, our elections are the same thing. If there is reasonable doubt, which there has been proof of this, there has been proof of absolute reasonable doubt, not just of the voter fraud, but there is evidence and proof that was provided to Congress on the 5th of January that the Electoral College was unconstitutional as defined by the Constitution and the framers, as well as the 12th Amendment. And so clearly, Congress had to stop. Congress had to follow the 12th Amendment, rejecting the Electoral College because it was unconstitutional. That's what they had to do. But see, what Pence and the rest of these folks are trying to do is they're trying to point to this insurrection and, you know, this, you know, spoiled baby attitude and so forth. No, no, no. We have a rule of laws and we expect government to function, and no elected official can be proven elected unless they have proven beyond a reasonable doubt that they are elected. And that has not happened. Bottom line, it was proven beyond a reasonable doubt that the Electoral College was unconstitutional. And therefore, the choosing of the president in accordance to the Constitution required Congress to convene into their quorums, the Senate and the House, and vote and choose. The House would choose the president, and the Senate would choose the vice president. Now, the good thing is that they didn't do it at that time, because then we'd be stuck with this progressive evildoer Pence. Pence has only proven himself as a swamp creature. He's the champion of the swamp creatures now. And he wants a good, clean run. And boy, the global progressives are looking at possibly making him the next president. Because why not? I mean, this guy is out there and he is basically going after the Constitution full force by making his accusations and unfounded assertions. Now, I'm here to tell you that anybody, Liz Cheney, they all need to be removed. Anybody that supports this concept that January 6th was about an insurrection and not about a constitutional petitioning of our government. Why? Because we actually legally petitioned them on the 5th. They were responsible to respond, and they failed to respond. As a matter of fact, their response was a direct obligation, or I should say a direct violation of their constitutional obligation. They chose to violate the Constitution by accepting an unconstitutional electoral college. All of this, this whole argument is laid out, and the legal argument of this, of what we are doing with the We the People Foundation, Bob Schultz, and this lawsuit that he's pursuing, because we worked with him directly on this. This is why we were, you know, in the know on all of this all the way. As a matter of fact, my conversation in February is what drove Bob to actually take this lawsuit on, because he recognized that this was a slam dunk. Not only did we do their, we did our job, but they failed to do their job. And now we have legal standing to sue Congress, which has never been done before. I mean, we're at such a point where government is so out of whack that we could actually abolish it and or put aside, but we don't need to and we don't want to. The good Lord gave us a constitution that is, that if we use it, it will heal itself. It will heal the government for us. It is that powerful. Only a person that really understands. And when you start to get there, when you understand Republic Review, you'll actually see that this is how the Lord blessed us with a system and a constitution that actually will allow us to heal the impurities, to heal these evil sins and violations of the Constitution. And obviously, the 14th Amendment was a key integral part for what we needed in these days. That's why most people look at the 14th Amendment as unconstitutional and evil and so forth. But anyway, I digress. I told you we're going to get into the Whiskey Rebellion. We really did wrap up the essay on property. And so what we want to do is I want to get into the storytelling of history. And actually what I did was I copied a couple of different articles from, I think it's the history page or what have you, because the way they told the history was interesting. And I think that interesting is better than me just kind of reading out of newspaper clippings and tying things together, because I think they did a good job. So credit out to the history.org or whatever. If you want to know where I got it, I'll be happy to give you the link to it. There are things I'm going to editorialize and provide clarification and other things, because I don't necessarily, you know me, I don't necessarily agree with everything that they put out there. Because if there is contrary evidence, then I will state so. And I think that's very important that we do that. So anyway, this show, if I guess I'm getting so old, if I just said it, my short-term memory is completely blank that I said it. This show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. And our comment line is 425-270-5416. So what we want to do is now look at this Whiskey Rebellion. The reason why I want to read it this way and then editorialize is I want to place context and apply the Whiskey Rebellion to today's crisis, like this January 6th crisis, and what the progressives are trying to do with this narrative of seizing more of our liberties and justifying it. We do not have, what we need to do is we need to have this debate about this whole concept of petitioning government, that they cannot make a law that locks that door. That is our government, not theirs. We are not their subjects. They are our public servants, and we must understand that relationship. And when we do, we can move forward, and they will function as public servants as we duly elect them and proven legitimately elected. Now, the Whiskey Rebellion, technically it happened in 1794, but I want you to understand that the history behind all of this really started with the Assumption Act. And there are direct ties to the Assumption Act. So, as it goes, the Whiskey Rebellion was a 1794 uprising of farmers and distillers, more so distillers and alcohol consumers. When they say farmers, I mean, I don't believe anybody, if you didn't drink distilled liquor, because really the Whiskey Rebellion wasn't a rebellion against whiskey only. It was a tax. It was a rebellion against the taxation on distilled alcohol, distilled liquors. In other words, strong spirits. There were plenty of people in America. John Adams didn't drink whiskey. John Adams drank his hard cider. It was more of like an apple beer. You know, they all drank. And the reason why they drank alcohol so the reason why alcohol was such a prevalent sustenance in the day is because it was a preserved sustenance that did not need refrigeration. I mean, how is it that you can have liquid nutrients in the wintertime and during the spring and summer before you could actually grow and then make juices from the fruit, from the food that was produced during the cycle of agricultural production? This is why, without, you know, importing and all these other things, they have fresh fruit year-round by using the Southern Hemisphere and the Northern Hemisphere of exporting their goods to the world. And today, surprisingly, we're now seeing how Congress has taken away those things like made in the USA, grown in the USA. You have no idea where your fruit is being produced and where your meat is being produced. And you will learn, and you'll quickly learn, how they are literally selling the rug out from underneath us, how Congress is doing that. And so Congress does not have the authority. This is why a couple of weeks ago I told you that the states really need to start being evaluating what their strategic plans are for feeding their people. They need to make sure that they have enough ranchers, they have enough, you know, chickens and the meat produce, the production of meat and all different types of produce, as well as the manufacturing of the different food types of necessities to feed their people. Because we have been moved into the same mode. We've been moved into the same mode as those that were a part of the Arab uprising during, you know, the Obama years of 2010, 11, 12. And I'm here to tell you that as you look at all of that that happened, that all happened because the cost of food went up and the people didn't have the access to grow and produce their own food. They were dependent on external forces. We'll be right back.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416. Okay, so let me also place context to some words that they're using here that are important. And so what I just read, the Whiskey Rebellion was a 1794 uprising of farmers, or actually distilled liquor consumers, not all farmers were that, and distillers in western Pennsylvania in protest of a whiskey tax enacted by the federal government. Now, protest, please note that they use the word protest, not petition, because you do not have a right to be able to protest government. You have a right to petition government for the redress of grievances. And what these people were doing was they were not doing their constitutional duty of holding government accountable by living within their bounds. They were just reacting to this fact that they were being taxed and they felt that this was unfair. And instead of petitioning and understanding their constitutional standing, they're just out there like everybody else is protesting when this new government created something more civil for us to do in interacting with government by petitioning. And so when we go through this, I'm going to be focusing on that very specific thing, okay? And so as the following years of aggression with tax collectors continued, the region finally exploded in a confrontation that resulted in President Washington sending troops to quell what some feared could become a full-blown revolution. Well, this is what happens when you have an illiterate group of people regarding the Constitution. Now, I'm going to tell you, they didn't go out and educate people about the Constitution at that point in time. And so what they had to do is the government had to use force. The government had to basically inflict some of these things upon the people to say, look, we now have these constitutional powers. We've never had a government that's capable of this. But by the way, these are very limited powers, which is why most people didn't even understand what was going on. They didn't understand why, you know, the federal government was creating this navy. Under Adams, they actually started creating the navy. I mean, Washington was more concerned about uniting and pulling the nation together after this you know, whole fiasco of the Articles of Confederation, the Revolutionary War, and so forth, and the unification of the states was foremost. And you'll see in his behavior, both in this Whiskey Rebellion and his other things that he did, he was really a unifier. We need a Washington today. You know, a friend of mine, Douglas V. Gibbs, kind of said, you know, you kind of remind me of Madison back when he was pursuing the Constitutional Convention, looking for a Washington to champion Republic Review. And that's true. That is very true. I'm out there trying to find leaders and so forth. And I'll be honest, I'm going to tell you, because I've said this to other people, we absolutely need leaders coming from, and I'm going to be politically correct on this, from those people of color who understand the Constitution, understand it based on the truths in the source documents, not these interpretations and narratives that were being fed by all of these people in social media, the news, and everything else. But having these people come out and become champions like James Madison of old, and basically state that this Constitution is the greatest document in protecting all people's liberty, period. That it is a government of peace and tranquility, and one that protects and preserves liberty for our posterity and years to come. In the spirit of a limited and well-defined government, we have been blessed. And the fact that we're here now is because of that blessing, period. And that we need people of color to start doing that. And we see that, and I'm glad that Candace Owens and others, conservative entertainers, and, you know, and even some of these political hacks, but they need to wake up. They need to wake up and realize that they are illiterate when it comes to the Constitution, which is why they, Candace and Alan West and all of these others, do not understand. I mean, Thomas Sowell, a brilliant man, and I think he does understand the Constitution, but I don't think he wants to get into constitutional debates. His focus in life was the migrations of people. His focus in life, actually, his major was economics. That's what interested him. That's what drove him to understand the complexities of economics. And so, anyway, I'm sorry. It's easy to digress when I start editorializing, but anyway, opposition to the whiskey tax and the rebellion itself built support, built political support for the Republicans. Now, I'm taking a note right here, another quick aside. Here in this article, in context, they are identifying the political party that is rising because of this whiskey tax as Republicans. That when Madison and Jefferson really took over, when they basically stood up, they created a national movement in 1799 called the Republican Party. And many people are telling, you know, that was the Democratic Republicans. No, it wasn't. And they're actually reciting the fact that they were Republicans, not Democratic Republicans. That the Republican Party, the founder of the Republican Party, truly was Madison. Why? Because Jefferson was actually vice president at the time. And he had to tiptoe. Jefferson was a very smart, calculating man. He made sure that he's in a very safe position whenever he put blood on his hands. Whenever he said something that could poke somebody in the eye, he made sure he had these, you know, either deniabilities or some level of protection and indemnified, what have you. Because like with the Declaration of Independence, that was truly poking the king in England in the eye, not the king in England, but the king and England. Just want to make sure that I didn't say that fast enough to where, what was that? King in England? No, King and England. The King of England and all of England, Parliament and the rest of them. He poked all of them in the eye. And then when he was over there as the emissary, I think I've even recounted that him and John Adams, they actually walked on the path of liberty. They came to the crossroads where the beginning of the Glorious Revolution was, the absolute crossroads. And then as they realized that they were standing at the crossroads and they saw all these Englishmen that were completely numb to the fact that they've lost their liberties, started chastising them and admonishing them. What has happened to you? Look at all the liberties you've lost. And this is the birthplace of your Bill of Rights. Why are you not Englishmen fighting for your rights here? So he may have held a little bit of safety, feeling he could get away with taunting the enemy, because here he was, an American on emissary duty in England during the Revolutionary War, poking him in the eye. But I mean, for the most part, he was very, very quiet into not having any implications that he possibly broke the law. Which is why he hardly ever wrote about nullification, because of his fear that as a vice president, he overstepped his bounds in actually publicly getting involved in fighting the government. Anyway, back to what I had just basically focused on, you know, as we start looking at these words I'm going to be reading, I'm going to be taking these asides to start help elevating some of these things. So anyway, the opposition to the whiskey tax as they were being perceived was one that they felt that was going to take over the country as a revolution, because they saw this growing support for the Republican Party, who overtook the Federalist Party's power, full power, in 1802. I mean, there was a big shift, and I told you that Madison and Jefferson actually were successful in exercising a coup of the Federalist control of our government in 1802. And folks, we don't have a Jefferson and Madison today. This is why I'm looking for, GR is looking for, not just a General Washington, but all the other necessary leaders that we need to engage and enroll in this fight to save our Constitutional Republic. We don't need to abolish our government. We need to make them comply. And the good Lord gave us everything we need to do that. And I'm proving this. But anyway, back to the Whiskey Rebellion. It was considered one of the first major tests of the authority of the newly formed U.S. government. As I have been telling you, personally, GR, that individual states incurred significant debt from the Revolutionary War, so does this history article tell you this. In 1790, Treasury Secretary Alexander Hamilton pushed for the federal government to take over that debt. He also suggested an excise tax on whiskey to prevent further financial difficulty. So this Assumption Act was directly tied to this. So this is why these two things cannot be divorced or cannot be overlooked as its importance, because this was a glowing violation of the Constitution that the states never stepped up. And interestingly enough, Madison didn't feel that this was as significant of an infraction on the states' rights to actually champion the states to go against this, probably more so because he became implicated and culpable by Jefferson in getting this by actually stopping his fight against the Assumption, the Assumption Act, by actually allowing the seat of Washington to be placed in the Washington, D.C. area. So he probably had these overpowering levels of guilt that he compromised his morals and his standards in allowing this problem to be planted within the federal government, powers that didn't exist. And Madison, there's no doubt in my mind, he learned later on that clearly the states had the power to stop this and actually clean all this up. He never pointed to them to do this, maybe because it was his mess and he didn't want to have or bear part of the blame. Anyway, we'll be right back after these two promos. If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and their 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires two-thirds of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, just to be very clear here, when they went down this path, this is why we really covered the details of the Assumption Act and how it violated this. But again, like I said, there's no doubt that Madison probably did not speak much about this and kind of bit his tongue because he was compromised. And I think, you know, any man, whenever they're identified as compromised, you know, they usually kind of they withdraw. They kind of just, okay, yeah, I don't want to make things worse for myself. So for the most part, I believe that that's one of the reasons why he didn't write much about this particular violation. But if you look at the violation of political speech with the Alien and Sedition Acts, I mean, boy, that was really crossing the line. But if you put it in context to his paragraph, or I should say his essay, I don't know why I always want to call it his paragraph, his essay on property, he clearly places emphasis that our rights of speech and conscience is the essence of the spirit of America and the founding of America, to protect and preserve all of the individual rights. Which is why they were in favor of creating an enumerated constitution instead of a Bill of Rights. Their fear of a Bill of Rights was, what if we didn't include it? What if down the road something else comes along, like intellectual property, like domain, and those types of things that we have discovered with technology to be able to say, hey, you know, somebody has property rights to that. And understanding, you know, those basic things, they wanted to guard against the encroachment of any potential. Remember, if there's any potential that a person didn't commit a crime, then it would be abhorrent. It'd be evil to think that we put an innocent person behind bars. It's equally abhorrent that we put a person who was not duly elected by the law and the process of law, but by trickery and voter fraud, election fraud, and all of these other things, then that person should not be serving. It's the same. So what do we do? People are asking this question. What do we do when we prove, we've already proven that Biden is not the president? He will not become a constitutional president until the 12th Amendment has been acted upon for this period, for this term of the presidency of the United States. We are in a constitutional crisis because we do not have a legitimately constitutionally established president, period. So what do we do? And so what we have to do is we have to get Congress to do their job, and then we can have an actual constitutional president. All of this other stuff in the political forum and in the, you know, people's, you know, opinions and all these other things, you know, they don't hold any water. The only thing that holds water is the actual constitutional process that has to be followed. And that hasn't been done. And so until everybody starts ranting compliance to the Constitution and then following it up with, we must follow the election process in Article 2 and the 12th Amendment. And because we don't have an electoral college, we have to have Congress choose the president. So now Congress go convene and choose the president in accordance with the 12th Amendment. Done. It's all done. It's that simple, folks. All we have to do is understand what we have to do. Ergo, as I was stating yesterday, this is why I kind of have this curriculum that we kind of go through this. And as we go through this each year or each time, the focus is shifted to whatever the problem du jour or the narratives that are, you know, bubbling or trending to the top. Anyhow, back to this, as we were talking also, Hamilton was a very dubious person, and he knew what he was doing in going out and trying to create this debt. Now, I understand it's good for America to have good credit. Absolutely. It's just like it's good for any young kid to go out and establish good credit. But when we're put into a position where money can no longer be property, how good of a credit history can you build if you can't possess that property? Because I'm telling you, you could be, you know, you could be nobody in the creditor's eyes, but you can have a lot of money and then instantly come down and drop and buy something without having to be subject to the banks and their usury costs or their high interest rates costs of you to be able to buy a car or whatever it is you want to buy. Because that's how they make money. So that's how they play and rig the system. Well, governments sometimes need to borrow money. Well, okay, so when we need to borrow money, we do want to have America identified as a good credit system. Now, how can we have good credit going back to our U.S. debt? And I can really wander on these things. But going back to our U.S. debt and that debt clock, none of that is constitutional. In other words, how good is our debt if we're willing to take money that we're not supposed to take to spend on things we have no authority to spend on? How good is our debt with the world? This is such a facade. Our whole debt crisis is such a facade. They are creating this to convince us very soon that we have to surrender our sovereignty, surrender our economic system to the world global communist for this big, huge reset. Friends, this is how important Republic Review is. This is how important it is for you to get involved and start sharing this level of information so that people can just start having these epiphanies of waking up and going, oh my gosh, because with the thousands of people that understand Republic Review, it is still not enough. And when I say thousands, I'm using that pretty loosely because I know there are people probably in the thousands that have heard of Republic Review and they kind of understand a little bit, you know, but there's way too much. And this is why, you know, I'm so frustrated and I would lose my military bearing and probably go high into the right on those leaders in the John Birch Society who are deliberately lying and they're actually in a situation of libeling themselves because they're saying things that are absolutely untrue about Republic Review and about my intent behind this. But I don't have time to sit and fight those types of battles. Now, when we get this movement moving and we get enough of the state legislators and people on the ground moving this, then maybe I'll turn around because we have the evidence to go after the John Birch Society and sue them for libel. They deliberately try to obviate the facts and try to create the suspicion that I am trying to have a convention of states to rewrite the Constitution or amend it. Now, they're being as ludicrous because they realize that if we successfully. This is why conservative organizations are going to go full bore against me, and they're going to try to attack every bad deed that they can find on me. Why? And I said this in my book when I first wrote it. I knew this was going to happen. Just like the framers in the Declaration of Independence knew that they were putting their lives on the line by signing that document. Because they have, everything that they have is riding on this failure and violations of the problem. Or I should say, the goose that's laying their golden egg is the problem. The government not complying to the Constitution is what keeps them valid. If we get rid of the goose that's laying their golden egg, if we make the federal government in full compliance, then who cares about the John Birch Society? They don't know how to become relevant. And I already told you weeks ago, when we came back from Red Pill Expo, I pointed to say, why doesn't the John Birch Society look to lead the states in the ratification debates so that they can help delineate and actually canonize and help canonize the Constitution with the Constitution Party? Why aren't we working together and canonizing the Constitution so that the states can actually say, this is how the Constitution was defined by the ratification debates. This is how we need to move forward, period. It's... I get so frustrated. Anyway, but I'm back to the whiskey tax and the whiskey rebellion. So, anyway, as Hamilton kind of revealed his cards, he wanted to actually push this upon the American people to pay off states' debts. Had the states done this, as Madison stated before, they would have been far better off because they're going to... And bottom line, we're ruining the day that this violation of the Constitution persisted ever since. Anyway, as the History Education Org page says, but the protests against the new tax began immediately, arguing the tax was unfair to small producers. Under the new law, large producers paid the tax annually at a rate of 6 cents per gallon. And the more they produced, the further they would get in a tax break, so even less than 6 cents a gallon. However, small producers were stuck with paying 9 cents per gallon in taxes. Well, hold on here. In other words, they were incentivizing people to be able to do more, but they were hurting the little person by not having it equitable. In other words, now the large producers could actually drive out, with the help of government, the small producers by giving them an extra overhead of taxation. So I can understand how that was wrong, and this problem itself was completely swept under the rug regarding the Whiskey Rebellion. Because bottom line, the only thing that the federal government did was they proved that these guys were committing treason. Instead of, had these people, instead of protested, they petitioned government to say, this is unconstitutional. The government should not be able to create advantages for one over another. The apportionment should be equally uniform across the states and across all boundary lines. Anyway, so we're now in the Whiskey Rebellion. We're now into the whiskey taxes and so forth. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. And we'll be back with the Whiskey Rebellion in our next episode. God bless. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcasts and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobius Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobius Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.